back together again. You and I, Tuesday, May 9th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We welcome to Heritage Foundation immigration expert Simon Hankinson to chat about this Thursday's impending end of Title 42 at the U.S. southern border. And I wondered out loud earlier in the show if the U.S. needs a uniform nationwide adult age. The other big story this week nationally is going to be what happens on Thursday when Title 42 goes away at the border. Now, yes, that could very well affect us here in Connecticut. At last check, there are about 125,000 undocumented illegal migrants, whatever language you prefer, in the state here. And you see in neighboring New York, where New York City's mayor, Eric Adams, is now sending a few hundred migrants to a small town outside New York, and the local leaders are really upset at that. That could happen here. You never know. We'll keep you updated. Joining us right now is a gentleman to talk about this. From 1999 to 2023, for almost 25 years, he was a foreign service officer serving in India, Fiji, Ghana, Slovakia, Togo, Washington, D.C., Marseille, and Nairobi. Prior to entering the State Department, he worked as a lawyer in London and then taught history, English, and drama at a private school in Miami. He's currently a senior research fellow for border security at the Heritage Foundation. Welcoming Simon Hankinson to the program. Hi, Simon. It's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. Great to be with you.
And Simon, thank you for, again, continuing my tradition of having a far better business card, resume, and a passport than I will ever have. So thank you for that. I applaud you for all that. Jeez.
You're far too kind to read it all out.
Well, no, listen, when I have guests, I got to tell people while I have them why I have them. Simon, good to speak with you with your worldwide expertise. What's going to happen on Thursday, Simon, when, barring some sort of last-minute agreement in Congress, which we all know is not going to happen, what's going to happen Thursday when Title 42 goes away?
Well, I suspect we're just going to have much more of the same, and the same is chaos at the border. We've been seeing now for 2 years that the Biden administration has essentially opened the doors. But they have been expelling a considerable number of people, I would say reluctantly, under Title 42. So while they're paroling in as many as they possibly can, and they've lowered all the standards for asylum, and they've released people sometimes with court dates years in the future, and sometimes without any court dates at all, just with a notice to show up at an ICE office, they actually did expel under this Title 42 health authority because of COVID, over a million people in 2021 and 2022, and about a half million in 2023. So when that goes away, it's not going to be a radical change of emphasis. It's just going to be more of the same and worse.
Now, we're going to hear, undoubtedly, Simon, the line from the White House. I think it's going to be a twofold line here, my guess. You can correct me if you think wrong. But, you know, we're going to hear about, well, Congress has to step up, as they always say. And number two, they're kind of shuffling out the line now of, well, you know, we have to grant, you know, according to our laws and international laws, you know, we have to grant asylum. They'll be adjudicated down the road. Do you anticipate that part of the argument's going to be here as well? You know, people need asylum and we can't just shut the doors.
Yeah, I do. And I don't disagree with the concept of asylum. The United States has a very generous refugee policy. In theory, we should be accepting up to 125,000 refugees who are vetted and screened overseas to make sure that they qualify under our laws. But last year we did 25,000. Why? Because we are sending all of our personnel and spending all of our time at the border dealing with the illegals trying to cross in, 9 out of 10 of whom don't qualify for asylum. They're here for jobs, for a better life. And, you know, that's, you know, entirely up to them to try, but it's against our law. I think that excuse about Congress failing to act is always one that they use. But you can't extort Congress to act the way you want them to. Yeah, Congress passes the laws in this country, and it's the administration, the executive's job to enforce those laws.
Okay, back to open phones momentarily. First couple more minutes here with Simon Hankinson, senior research fellow in the Border Security and Immigration Center at the Heritage Foundation. Of course, this is all going to come to a head this Thursday when Title 42 goes away and the amount of migrants admitted into the U.S. is going to increase a lot from what it was during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Simon, where do you come down on how porous the border is? You have one side saying, well, we have open borders. You have the other side saying, no, the borders are not open. We have good control over what's going on, although a lot of people are coming here. Where do you fall on this? Where's the hair splitting, if any?
Well, I was down there in Texas about 6 months ago and in Yuma, Arizona about a month ago, and I saw for myself it is porous. There are large gaps all along the border where people just walk right over, run right over, and immediately surrender to CBP. I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go watch a group of about 300 people from 16 different countries. I spoke to some of them, and they were just walking right on over. So I don't think you can define that as anything but open.
You know, Simon, you know, of course, my relatives came here from Europe decades and decades and decades ago, but we have one gentleman in our building here who immigrated to the U.S. legally. He just passed all of the tests. He became a U.S. citizen, passing all the proper immigration tests. You know, of course, Simon spent a lot of money for immigration attorneys and whatever, but he's so proud of himself, and we are here too. But I would imagine, Simon, that for a lot of people who do it the quote-unquote right way, that's got to be a real burr in their saddle. I can imagine how many of them are upset with this.
Well, I wrote a piece called The Legal Immigrant's Lament because I myself am an immigrant. I came here when I was 6 years old, and I went through that process. Mm-hmm. And I also, in my career, I spent about half my career doing legal immigration, interviewing people. I must have interviewed over 100,000 people for either short-term visas or immigrant visas. I've signed personally hundreds of them. And yeah, it really gets my goat, too, to see people bypass that system. People waiting in line 25 years in India, the Philippines, and Mexico to do it legally, and you can just walk across tomorrow and do it illegally.
Well, Simon, I can imagine the stories you must – I mean, that would be a good book. Of course, do it anonymously. Don't name names there. But you must have heard just – in that part of your background that you just told me about, you must have heard some amazing stories of longing and perseverance and people who are just determined to do it, but as you say, do it the right way.
I'll tell you, nothing makes you happier as a consular officer than watching someone go through the immigration process who deserves it and seeing the look on their face when they know that they're going to start a new life in the United States. That's what this country is all about. But then if you let people in with absolutely no screening, where you don't know their names, you don't know their criminal histories, and you parole them into the country essentially forever, then you are undermining that process and you're spitting in the face of all those people who are trying to do it the right way.
A few more minutes here with Simon Hankinson from the Heritage Foundation. Simon, do you think the White House is set up for a worst-case scenario? You know, the visuals, Simon, are going to be there. I know they don't like the fact that Fox and some other outlets tend to have drones in the air. You know, the visual is going to be there. How do they deal with this from a political point of view? What are they going to say?
That's going to be really interesting because I've got to say, it's amazed me how much, I mean, I've spent 23 years pretty much overseas, coming back and seeing how the press selectively covers things like crime and immigration. And the extent to which they pretty much bury this story has been somewhat shocking because I think people have a right to know. They don't have to agree with me, but they have a right to see what's actually happening at the border. And so far, they've been able to spin it. Mayorkas keeps coming out and testifying and saying, you know, by my definition of under control, the border is under control. I think that's going to be really hard to do if the numbers start doubling and some of the major networks, not just all the ones on my side of this argument, start covering it.
Simon, I like that by my definition thing. I should do that with the IRS. Hey, Mr. IRS, by my definition, I paid my taxes, right? Should we do? Maybe we should try that. Do I do that, Simon, or not? Or are you saying that's not a good idea?
Well, I'm definitely not in a position to give tax advice, but I have a funny feeling that that didn't work out so well for Capone and many others.
Finally, Simon, final question. We'll let you go. You know, with your worldly experience, your resume is amazing. Does any other country on the planet, any other developed country, do they allow their border to be breached like this? Is anybody else doing this?
I have never seen anything like it in my lifetime, with the exception of wars. Germany, but in 2015, Chancellor Merkel said, you know, we can take them all. We'll figure it out. And they took about a million people. And I think they realized afterwards that that was about all they could absorb for that period. And they stopped. But I've never seen a country do what we're doing and essentially take in millions of people a year.
Check out his stuff, Heritage Foundation, heritage.org, heritage.org. Simon Hankinson. Simon, thank you. Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Thanks.
It's my pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. Simon Hankinson, Senior Research Fellow, Border Security and Immigration. How about that? He actually spent years and years as an immigration attorney, signing off on getting people into the system and getting them into the U.S. Served in the Foreign Service in Fiji, India, Ghana, Slovakia, Togo, Washington, D.C., Marseille, and Nairobi. Man, at least his passport gets use, unlike mine. So I started thinking about something that's kind of always been something I've been questioning for the past, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years after I reached, I guess, adulthood. What do they say? Guys never actually become adults. We're still kids, but with more expensive toys, right? And first wives and second wives and all that. But I got to thinking about this, and I thought this would be something really interesting to get your thoughts on here on Connecticut Today on this Tuesday, the 9th of May, 2023. In doing prep for the show today, we got a lot of stuff we're going to touch on today, nationally, locally, Fairfield County-wise, all that. I noticed a story that kept popping up in my feeds, and this, I guess, a reaction to what happened over the weekend at that mall outside Dallas, Texas, in the town of, or the city of, Allen, Texas, where you had, again, somebody who was not mentally well. You had a psycho there get out, pull his car up in front of the mall, and kill eight people. And thankfully, a police officer that was in the area was able to take him down. Well, you know, this is a guy apparently who had gotten kicked out of the military because of mental health issues, you know, they said years ago and all that. And you know, they identified him. He was 33 at the time of his death last weekend. I guess he had been kicked out of the military about 15 years ago when he was 18 or 19. But in reaction to that, there's a story floating around the globe and around the U.S. Apparently, there's a story floating that the Texas legislature, now understand, this is Texas, okay? This is not New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Illinois, Los Angeles area of California, Oregon, in the urban areas there in Portland, Oregon, which is just a full-on Olympic-level mess right now. But it has made some interesting news that there were enough Republican votes, I think, in one body of the Texas legislature to raise the age there to buy a long gun to 21 years old. Because I guess in most spots around the U.S., you can buy a long gun, which is not a handgun. In most of the, I think federally, it's 21 years old to buy a handgun. That's in place to, you know, cut down on urban crime, which is still, if you look at the numbers, an urban and suburban crime involving people shooting each other, gangs, gangbangers, robberies, jewelry stores, convenience stores, gas stations, and all that. The number of people killed in those incidents is far higher. But the media doesn't really talk about that all that much because you can't really get political about it. In fact, as we speak right now, I'm sure, unfortunately, there is somebody across the U.S. and maybe here in Connecticut, although I hope not, somebody committing a crime with a handgun. But I saw that story and I said to myself, wow, are things starting to turn here as far as at least the continued resistance by some states and by the Republican Party and by conservatives in general to do anything with gun laws. Now, back to my original point here. It's not so much about guns. but assuming you're talking about people who are not mentally unstable, you're talking about people who did not get kicked out of the military because they were crazy, have not been visited by police anymore. But riddle me this. Think about this. We're very schizophrenic in this society when we decide when you're an adult. And I've always found that a little weird because, of course, now, like I said, in most of the country, if not all of it, I'm not that up on gun laws, but you need to be 21 to buy a handgun. But as is shown in Texas and a lot of other states, and it's that way here in Connecticut because I checked it before I went on the air, you can buy a long gun, you know, a shotgun, I guess a semi-automatic, when you're 18. So you can theoretically purchase, I guess because you're 18, you can theoretically purchase a much more, at least on a baseline level, a much more powerful weapon when you're 18 in many states than you can when you're than the handgun, which you have to wait till 21 for, which at least statistically and anecdotally by what police say and by what law enforcement officers say and officials say, is a far more used weapon. I mean, let's face it, anytime we do stories on this radio station, whether it's my program or Lisa's in the midday or Melissa in the morning, and you hear the news, let's face it, you don't hear about gang shootings in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, Waterbury, Danbury, Middletown, Meriden, where AR-15s are used. Occasionally there'll be one used, but it's all handguns. If somebody gets carjacked, rarely do you hear that it's a long gun. It is a handgun that's used. And we have a higher age to buy a handgun, but we have a lower age to buy a long gun. Now, I know what people say, well, the long guns are used for hunting. Okay, I kind of get that. But I wonder if the dam is about to break in Texas with, I guess, a handful of Republicans, two or three of them, joining up with Democrats and saying, hey, let's at least take a further look, a more nuanced look here as to whether or not, an 18-year-old who is, you know, you could say would just be barely out of high school can go and buy a long gun. Now, akin to that, and here's my major question today, just to start us off, but you can chime in if you think it has to do with guns or anything else here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. This gun debate, handguns versus long guns, always to me tickles in my mind a greater debate of what do we consider an adult in this country, because we're really schizophrenic about this when you consider it, right? You register to vote at 18, and the standard level of education, for example, that a lot of employers want is 18. Now, right? You're kind of considered an adult at 18, I guess. I don't know whether there's any rote definition about that, but yeah, hey, he graduated from high school, he turns 18, so he can now vote. So we allow people in this country, at a certain age of 18, it's kind of like adulthood. That's where we kind of draw the line to on news reporting, right? Anybody else is kind of, I guess, under. If you're under 18, it's very difficult to get the name of a criminal suspect with juvenile laws. But why are we so schizophrenic with this that we can't really make up our mind who's an adult or when somebody is an adult? In other words, you're 18, you're out of school, you're considered to be ready to go into the Job Corps, the U.S. Job Corps. So you're 18. You can vote, right? You can be inducted or join the military at 18. All right. but you can't have a beer till you're 21. I've never kind of understood that. And you have to wait till you're 21 to buy a handgun in the vast majority of the U.S., I think the entire country. So you can graduate at 18, and in the vast majority of states, go buy a shotgun or a semi-automatic weapon, and you can do that at 18, and assuming you're a responsible gun owner, you're a hunter, whatever, but yet you have to wait 3 years to maybe buy a handgun because maybe you work in a dangerous area or you carry cash at night or, you know, you go and meet your girlfriend or your young wife at home and you two walk home together. But in most places, you can't do that. Do we need a universal age for everything? That's my question to start us off here. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Is it possible to have a universal age for everything? Meaning 18 or 21, maybe a little older. I don't know. We always hear in these debates up at the state capitol when it comes to nicotine and vaping and marijuana and smoking, we always hear, well, you know, the human brain is still developing until it's 25. All right, then why don't we make 25 the age for everything? Honestly, if we hear that every time by the health experts that, you know, troop and march in front of the members of the House and Senate up in Hartford, well, you know, we have to be careful with the way we incarcerate people because they really don't know what they're doing. There's no concept of the criminal gravity of what they do when they shoot someone at a young age. Well, okay then. Right? Is 25 the age? Is 21 the age? Can you conceivably have your you-know-what together at 18? And that story out of Texas got me thinking about this. It's much more than a Second Amendment story. It is to a point that Texas, believe it or not, Texas may have some Republicans now joining Democrats saying, hey, you know what? Maybe 18 is too young for long guns. You want to hunt? Well, that's too bad. Son, y'all got to wait till you're 21. But do we need a universal age for everything in this country? Should we have one age? So at whatever age, 18, I don't know, 20, 21, 25, should you be able to do everything at that age? Vote, buy alcohol, buy tobacco products, buy a long gun, buy a handgun, gamble legally and recreationally. I've always thought we've been real schizophrenic about this. Now, the military would never like an older age because they need to meet recruiting goals. And frankly, you know, a lot of guys and some gals, they look at that military thing when they get out of high school because they don't know what they want to do. They'll get some pay. They'll have their housing paid for. They can conceivably in 2 or 4 years hang out there instead of going to college and maybe see a different part of the world that they never would have ended up going to in the first place. So I'm going to put this question on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WICC600. Should there be a universal age for adulthood in the U.S.? And maybe it's not the numerical age. Am I too tied up in the numerical age of all this? Is it less a number and more of a... you know, of what's between the ears here, of a mental, you know, some level of maturity here. Because, again, this story in Texas got me thinking here. Wow, they're going to raise the age for long guns in Texas? Maybe it's time that people say, hey, maybe 18 is too young for some things or not.